Hello. My name is Don Will, staff at the Judicial Council, and welcome to the webinar on the Court-Appointed Counsel Funding Allocation Methodology. This webinar was presented on June 4th to the Joint Subcommittee of the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee and the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. Because of technical problems, we've decided to re-record the webinar without the technical glitches and post this version. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Amy Nunez, to start us off.
Hello, I'm Amy Nunez, supervisor of the draft program. At its April 17th meeting, the Judicial Council established this group to review the current methodology in detail and to recommend changes to the Judicial Council by April 2016. I'm standing in for Audrey Fancy, who's co-counsel to the Family and Juvenile Law Advisory Committee and will be serving as staff to this project. The purpose of this webinar is to provide a brief overview of the current workload and funding methodology used by the Judicial Council to allocate funds for Dependency Council in preparation for the Joint Subcommittee's first meeting on June 19th in San Francisco. As this informational presentation is going on, this webinar will not include a voice committee, as it's a re-recording of a previous session. All participants were put on mute for that session. Don, can you walk us through the history of the current caseload funding model?
Certainly, Amy. The caseload funding model is the methodology that's used by the Judicial Council to calculate the funding required for Dependency Council in California. It's based on client count, attorney workload standards, and estimated salaries and costs. The methodology is rooted in Senate Bill 2160, which was passed in 2000 and directed the Judicial Council to develop practice and caseload standards for court-appointed counsel. As a result, the Council conducted a workload study in 2002. The Dependency Representation, Administration, Funding, and Training Program, or DRAFT, was piloted in 2004, in part to provide more information on attorney workload, costs, and practice. And finally, in 2007, the Council adopted the methodology we are discussing today.
We have some complicated material to cover in the next 20 minutes. So let me note that the slides and a great deal of supporting documentation on the current methodology will be posted on the web pages of the two committees after this webinar. Don, I know you say that methodology includes only a few moving parts. What do you mean by that?
Well, the methodology can appear complex, but there are really only three inputs. There's the time an attorney spends on various tasks. There is the number of clients an attorney has. And finally, the dollar amount that's assigned for compensation and expenses. The methodology is based in part on a workload study of attorneys in the state that was conducted in 2002. The workload study collected data on what tasks every attorney in the state performed, how long those tasks took, over a two-week period. After the data was analyzed, it was evaluated by focus groups that included attorneys, judges, and court executives. The working group developed three models of total attorney time spent on a case, a model that was based on the data reported by the time study, which reflected very short amounts of time attorneys were able to spend on a case and very high caseloads. An optimal set, a kind of best practices set of time standards that was derived from input from the focus groups. And finally, also derived from the focus groups, a set of time standards that was designed to provide case services at a basic level of competent practice. The basic level of competent practice looks like this slide. It has time standards for all tasks associated with each major phase in the case. For instance, the detention phase, including hearings and all the other pieces, requires about 3 hours. A 12-month review, also about 3 hours. A 2-6, or termination of parental rights hearing, about 2 hours.
So, Don, practically speaking, various events happen over a span of time, and any attorney is likely to have a mix of children recently removed from the home and children or youth who've been in the system for some time.
That's absolutely right. And another result of the time study was data on what that actual attorney caseload looks like, how many cases are in each phase. You can see from this slide that for the attorneys in the workload study, about half of their cases were in the first year, which seems right because we know that many, many children go home after less than a year in care. About a third of cases were in the phase that encompasses more or less the second year, beginning with the 12-month review, the 18-month review, and possibly a 2-6 hearing. And finally, 16% were in the phase of the third and additional years for the post-permanency hearings.
I see how a total amount of hours might be estimated for a single case. But since the key case phases place over 2 or more years and many children go home before the review hearings, how does the model account for that workload?
Through the time study, we learned the proportion of cases in the first, second, and third and subsequent years in an average attorney caseload. And that information allowed us to weight the time standards that we showed on a slide a little earlier to get a total number of annual hours per case that actually reflects the composition of the attorney's caseload. So if you look at this slide, you'll see that the total time requirement for any case in year one was judged to be 11.69 hours. But then that is weighted with the 47% of cases that an attorney has in her or his caseload, which leaves you with about 5.5 weighted annual hours.
Okay, what I'm hearing is that the weighted time standard sets a single time per attorney case, approximately 10 hours per year, and this time reflects that some of the cases in the attorney's caseload take more time because they're in the first year, and some may take less time because they're in post-permanency.
Exactly. And I think we should point out that a total of 10 hours per case is still aspirational for most of our attorneys in the state.
How do we get from that 10 hours to the caseload standards of 188 cases per attorney when the attorney is supported by a half-time investigator?
There are two more steps from what we have so far to the caseload standard. We set a number of hours that's available in a year for attorneys to be doing work on cases. And that amount is about 1,500 hours per year. We know that it takes about 10.5 hours weighted per case annually. So if you divide the 1,500 by the 10.5, you come to 141 cases per attorney. The second step was looking at what actually most attorneys in the state do, which is working in conjunction with a half-time social work or investigator professional. And with some surveys and outreach to attorneys doing that kind of work model, the working group came to an adjustment that the services of a half-time investigator created about a factor of about a third more cases that an attorney with the investigator could handle. And that number gets us to the 188 cases per attorney with a half-time investigator.
All right, well, that brings us to the second set of the inputs to this methodology, the number of parents and children represented by all of the court-appointed dependency counsel in the state.
Yes. How do we get to the caseload that the attorneys have? Well, the methodology uses data on children in court-supervised child welfare to get to that number. And it also uses a multiplier to estimate the number of parents in the system. This data is reported by counties to the State Department of Social Services through a statewide case management system called CWS-CMS. The data is then maintained by researchers at UC Berkeley. The data extracts that the Judicial Council uses for this methodology are restricted to those children and youth who are under court supervision. And then we then use the multiplier to estimate the number of parents in the system.
All right, so let me stop you here. Isn't the 0.82 parent cases per child another factor this joint subcommittee will be examining?
That's absolutely correct, and that's because we, in the courts using the child welfare data, don't have a good count of the number of parents who are parties to a child welfare case and so need parent representation. The multiplier we use now was derived from the 2002 study. And if you remember our discussion of case weighting, at the beginning of a case there may be two or more parents represented. 2 or 3 years into a case, there may be no parents represented. That brings us to an average of, across all cases, of a little under one parent per case, 0.82. That is, for 100 children, there will be 82 parents or 182 total clients.
Before we look at our final input, let me recap what we have so far. The methodology gives us a total number of parents and children that need representation, and with the caseload standard of 188, we can estimate the number of attorneys required to represent those clients. And our final input will allow us to assign a cost to those attorneys. So as we lead into the cost computations, I have a question. I know that the methodology assigns counties to 4 regions, each with an average attorney salary. But what map did you use to put Humboldt and Imperial into the same region?
Well, that's a good question, and it does cause a lot of confusion among everyone who works with the workload model. The regions are actually economic regions, not geographic regions, and they were created beginning with a survey of county council salaries in each county, and then grouping the counties into economic regions using socioeconomic indicators. Finally, an average salary was computed for each region. Then in addition, the salary for the part-time investigators was set at $55,000 annually statewide, and that number does not vary by region. These are the salaries by region, and you see that they range from, in Region 1, about $67,000 per year, to Region 4, with about $115,000 per year. Finally, we add benefits and overhead to the caseload funding model. Benefits for both attorneys and investigators are assigned at 25% of salary. And then overhead costs are assigned at 33% of the personnel total. Those are expected to cover supervising time, clerical time, rent, and other operating costs.
And here is how we take those inputs and use methodology to estimate a total funding need for the state. Is this the same method used to estimate a funding need for each county?
Yes, it is, except that on this slide we show an average salary for attorneys statewide, and when we do it for each county, we use the regional salary that we mentioned above. This calculation is, as you see, long and somewhat complicated, but I hope now you know a few more of the parts that go into it. A lot of the information on the caseload funding model, and then that's been in this webinar, is available through the Judicial Council's report to the legislature, Dependency Council Caseload Standards, which was delivered to the legislature in April 2008. And that report is available in the binder for the meeting, which will be posted online, as well as these slides.
That brings us to the end of our webinar. I want to remind you that a much more detailed description of the workload and funding methodology and other sources will be posted in the binder for the upcoming Joint Subcommittee meeting on June 19th. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Amy.